And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great and eventful day it is. It is a day of history, as Nancy Pelosi made clear when she announced her 7 impeachment managers. Does this mean that the entire mechanism of impeachment, which continues to play out today and tomorrow and then next week, the Senate trial actually begins on Tuesday? Does it mean it's going to play out and lead to the removal of President Donald J. Trump? No, of course not. Does it mean that this is going to rivet the attention of the country? Yeah, it's only happened twice before in history. There is a great deal of talk on the part of Nancy Pelosi about the Constitution and what it means and what it says. We'll talk about the Constitution and the entire constitutional basis for impeachment a little bit later with Matthew Spaulding, who is one of the outstanding political scholars on constitutionality and impeachment. He is with the Kirby Center of Hillsdale College. We'll be speaking to Matthew Spaulding coming up. We also are still reeling from that incredibly exciting, I mean explosive, Democratic debate last night. Well, now I'm teasing about that. It was actually, by very, very common consent, a slog. It went on for a while. Nobody burned up entirely. Nobody was completely deflated. It probably will have no effect on the contour of the race, but it does expose, I think, some of the problems the Democrats are going to have in the campaign ahead. Also, President Trump signs a great big Chinese trade deal, and the markets seem to love it. There is all kinds of prospects for a continued boom in the economy. We will get to that and what the Chinese trade deal means also a little bit later in the show. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. The one thing, and let me tell you about my experience of the debate. I was on a plane last night when the debate was live. So I watched the whole thing, and I watched the whole thing. I did not fall asleep. I battled sleep. After I arrived in Dallas, I'm broadcasting today from Glenn Beck's facility at Mercury Arts here in Dallas, which is, by the way, an amazing facility. And I just did a podcast with Glenn. And so last night I get to my hotel, and I got to my hotel just before midnight, just in time to tune in to a rebroadcast of the debate. And so watch the whole thing. And of course, the big confrontation between Bernie and Elizabeth Warren over an allegedly offensive comment that Bernie made to Elizabeth Warren. He denies that he ever made it. She claims that he said a woman can't win for the presidency. And it doesn't make any sense that Bernie would say that. And again, part of what was striking to me was the way that Abby Phillip of CNN, who was one of the questioners, I think her name was Blanche Fannenspiel, who was a local reporter from the Des Moines Register, and Abby Phillip from CNN, and Wolf Blitzer, who was the chair of the panel. Whatever they did with the format, it wasn't good. And in fact, how bad was it? Listen to the way that Van Jones, a former official, environmental advisor for President Obama. Van Jones is on CNN, and he Brad does a regular show on CNN and is a regular contributor. And he's clearly very much to the left. But he came away with this impression of the great, not so great debate.
I have to just say, you know, I came away feeling worried for the Democratic Party. I felt like tonight was a night that they were going to all put the fireworks out there. You're going to see the best of the best. And it just felt like a big bowl of cold oatmeal. And I got to say this, I missed Andrew Yang tonight. I missed Cory Booker.
All right, who wins the drink?
And I missed Cory Booker, and I missed Kamala Harris, and I missed Castro. I missed some of those voices and some of those issues, immigration and criminal justice. There's something that this party's got to figure out. How can it light that fire again? This felt like drudgery tonight. It shouldn't feel this way close to one of the most important elections in the country.
From your vantage point, watching that, no one on that stage, in your mind, walked away as that's the person who can go to.
I'm thinking of people I think about every day, places like Oakland and Philadelphia, whatever. Can any of those people get excited about what I saw tonight? And I don't see it. And I have to be honest about it. I don't see it.
Okay, and there was even more. And again, the idea of people getting excited about any of those folks on the stage, well, it was worse than that. Van Jones again.
But that was, as a progressive, to see those two have that level of vitriol was very dispiriting. And I want to say that tonight
Bernie
for me was
and
dispiriting.
Elizabeth.
Democrats have to do better than what we saw tonight. There was nothing I saw tonight that would be able to take Donald Trump out, and I want to see a Democrat in the White House as soon as possible. There was nothing tonight that, if you're looking at this thing, you say any of these people are prepared for what Donald Trump is going to do to us, and to see further division tonight is very dispiriting.
Okay, and what was he talking about the level of vitriol? It was in the very middle of the debate that they talked about the idea that Bernie had allegedly said that a woman can't win. What was striking to me was Abby Phillip asked Bernie Sanders first. She said, okay, Bernie, did you say that? Or why did you say that? And you'll listen that Bernie denies it. Says, no, I never said any such thing. And then she immediately goes to Elizabeth Warren. And without saying, is Bernie telling the truth? Do you disagree with him? Do you agree with him? She says, when Bernie said that to you, listen to the way it sounds. And it is just so obviously slanted that the moderators believe Elizabeth Warren's side of the story. Listen.
So, Senator Sanders, I do want to be clear here. You're saying that you never told Senator Warren that a woman could not win the election.
That is correct.
Senator Warren, what did you think when Senator Sanders told you a woman could not win the election?
I disagreed. Bernie is my friend, and I am not here to try to fight with Bernie. But look, this question about whether or not a woman can be president has been raised, and it's time for us to attack it head on. And I think the best way to talk about who can win is by looking at people's winning record. So, can a woman beat Donald Trump? Look at the men on this stage. Collectively, they have lost 10 elections. The only people on this stage who have won every single election that they've been in are the women, Amy and me.
There was more. And just to give you some idea of the childish level of this, at one point, she said that over the last 30 years, apparently, she said none of the men up here have ever knocked out a Republican incumbent. And then she says, I knocked out a Republican incumbent. And then Bernie said, what do you mean? When I was running for the House the first time, I ran against a Republican incumbent and I beat him. And then Elizabeth Warren says, okay, what year was that? Says 1990. Says, see, well, 30 years ago. I said for the last 30 years. Now, this kind of stupid gamesmanship that she's going to say for the last 30, and then she brings it up, and the back and forth. And by the way, Bernie Sanders, I think, was pretty persuasive. He made the point that, look, when Elizabeth Warren was thinking about running last time in 2016, Bernie was very respectful to her. He has, on many occasions, going back, as he says, 30 years, talked about women running for president and been in favor of it. Why would he ever say to her that a woman can't win? You know what I think it is? And we'll never know, because now Elizabeth Warren is frozen into this lie that Bernie said that, and her campaign depends on it. His not so much, because I don't think his people are bothered by it, and I think they probably believe him. Probably what the conversation was is he probably said, you know, Trump is going to take after you, and he's going to use everything he's got, and he's going to say a woman shouldn't be president. He may have said something like that. But the idea that he said she shouldn't run because a woman can't win, I believe Bernie on this one. And by the way, my opinion, I agree with what virtually everyone has said. This was a stale and stagnant debate. And yes, they did miss Andrew Yang. You know what Andrew Yang was doing? He was doing a rally. Apparently he had 750 people at his rally, which was on the same campus where they held this debate. And 750 people is a big crowd in Iowa. And he's polling right now, according to most polls, 4%, 5% in Iowa. He says, we're going to surprise people. We're going to shock the world at the Iowa caucuses. Who knows? But part of it was the format. Part of it was the fact that they had fewer people. And part of it was the fact that right now, this close to the primary, I think everybody is trying to be incredibly cautious and not to do anything to blow up your campaign, especially those four people. And that would be Bernie and Biden and Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren, each of whom have a chance of winning. Here is the likely outcome. You look at all the polling and you look at the debate last night. The very likely outcome for this race in Iowa is that there will be no clear winner. And no one is going to come out way ahead. You may remember that the Iowa caucuses, last time, President Trump did not do particularly well. He lost the Iowa caucuses to Ted Cruz. Didn't matter that much. But the Republican battle before that for Mitt Romney in 2012, Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum tied. They tied. It was considered a huge surprise because Rick Santorum had no money and he didn't place in any of the polls, and it was a surprise to everybody. But part of what happens in the Iowa caucuses is you go to a place where you're going to caucus with people and you all get together and then you take a ballot and you want to see if who is going to have 15% of the vote or more. And if you have voted for a candidate who got less than 15% of the vote in that caucus, you're able to pick your second choice. And that's one of the reasons that a lot of people think that Elizabeth Warren might do very well, because when it comes to people like Klobuchar, who may not get 15% in many places, or Andrew Yang, or other people, I think there still may be people who caucus for Kamala Harris. But they come in, they express that, and then you get a second choice. And Elizabeth Warren, according to many polls, is actually likely to be people's second choice. Not only did Van Jones cast aspersions on this debate, so did Al Sharpton, speaking about the Democratic debate and talking about the possibility of people actually taking on Donald Trump. Listen.
You cannot stand up and be just go along to get along and think you're going to be the next president. One thing Donald Trump and I used to do is both of us would go to boxing matches. He, of course, was hosting Mike Tyson. I was a friend of Tyson's and the promoters. You don't become champion by just saying, I'll get by this round. You got to take the title. And I didn't see anybody on the stage last night or in the ring that really said, I'm taking charge. I can be president. I can take on Donald Trump, because he is going to come in with that kind of mindset. And I don't see that mindset yet in any of the candidates.
Okay, when you don't see that mindset yet, when are you going to see the mindset? I mean, really, it's going to magically appear when they are actually running against Trump? You think so? I think it's extremely unlikely. And there's more. Morning Joe, also on MSNBC. Joe Scarborough, former Republican congressman. He's no fan of President Trump and no backer of President Trump, but he said this.
It was a dull debate. It was a plotting debate.
By the way, John, nobody looked good on that debate stage. Everybody's saying behind the scenes, who I've talked to, nobody looked good on the debate stage last night. It was probably everybody's weakest performance.
It was a dull and plodding debate. You had 39 minutes at the top of the debate about foreign policy and trade, and not really even any pointed questions about Iran. It was really kind of like, why are you the best person to be commander in chief? I really was sort of stunned by how airless and lifeless the debate was. So,
okay, airless and lifeless, those are not good things. And then Frank Luntz, king of focus groups, a fairly regular guest on this show, he said this about the debate last night.
Well, no one took any shots. There was really no fireworks. And in fact, of all the debates so far this year, I found it to be the most boring. Now, I'll tell you, I watched it with a group of 30 students from NYU, and those kids liked Elizabeth Warren the best because they felt that she made a very strong appeal to women. Not for her own candidacy, but for women in general, that this could be something significant for them. But there were no mistakes. I thought Joe Biden's close was his best so far in this debate season. There were no losers, but there weren't any big winners either.
And certainly there was one big winner. The big winner was Donald Trump. He was doing one of his rallies, which was not that different from any of his other rallies. He's done a lot of them and he enjoys doing them and people have a good time. I guess the only thing that was notable about this one is he spent a long time talking about restrictions on shower heads and not being able to get a good shower to deal with his beautiful head of hair that he was, I think, maybe showing some sense of humor about. That was one of the highlights of his rally in Milwaukee. Now, why is Milwaukee important? It's important not only because it is one of the key swing states that made him president of the United States. It's Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, but also because in Milwaukee is where they are going to be doing the Democratic convention. There are all kinds of difficulties with the way things were presented last night. And there was a reference in one of these comments to the idea that they were pushed and pushed on why would you make a good commander-in-chief. I think, by the way, it's a very fair question. It may not be a flattering question. It may not be the question the Democrats want. But that's ultimately what you're doing when you're trying to elect a president. For people like Tom Steyer or Pete Buttigieg, who have very limited political experience, what this question about being a good commander-in-chief, especially when we're coming out of a situation in Iran where there was so much criticism of the president as commander-in-chief, that, it seemed to me, was a good question. Why couldn't they answer it? Well, there are lots of reasons, but there are other ways that that question could have been answered effectively, it seems to me, and very easily. We will get to that, play you some of the highlights and lowlights of the great debate. 1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. And there's also a new study that we will get to that shows that marijuana use among college students is going up. But they are claiming there's a good side to that. What's the good side? And not just to marijuana companies. We'll get to that and more here on The Michael Medved Show.
Your daily dose of debate.
We're not supposed to all agree. You need to settle down a little bit and quit creating all that hate among the people.
The Michael Medved Show.
On the Michael Medved Show, one of the things that I think went wrong with the Democratic debate last night, and one of the reasons that it disappointed people so much, and including some very partisan pro-Democratic commentators, is that they were very careful not to attack one another. In other words, yes, they had Bernie Sanders criticizing Joe Biden for having voted to authorize the war in Iraq. And Joe Biden saying, well, yes, it was a mistake. And that was thrilling. But that was about as intense as it got. And then the stupid disagreement between Bernie and Elizabeth Sanders about whether he had ever said to her, I don't think a woman can win the election as president. Well, the fact is they were so starved for something dramatic and meaningful that they have made a big deal throughout cable news of an after-the-game interchange when Bernie comes is talking to Elizabeth Sanders. Tom Steyer is standing right between them. And Bernie extends his hand to shake her hand, and she won't shake Bernie's hand. And the fact that that is considered a dramatic highlight of the debate, and it's after the 2-hour and 15-minute debate was over. By the way, the information on the ratings for the debate is in, and it's not the complete disaster that people thought. I think that's because people are interested right now. They're interested in impeachment. They're interested in the fact that it is, 19 days before they actually have the Iowa caucuses. CNN's coverage of the 7th Democratic primary debate drew a bigger audience than the two that came immediately before it. Tuesday's six-candidate forum averaged 7.32 million TV viewers over its about 2 hours, 15 minutes, over its two-hour running time, an improvement on debates in November, where they got 6.6 million on MSNBC. This was 7.3 million. And December, where it was even lower, it was 6.2 million. That was on PBS and CNN. The debate was the last one to air before voting begins. Iowa caucuses are scheduled for February 3rd with the New Hampshire primary following hard upon on February 11th. In the key news demographic of adults, which is supposed to be adults between 25 and 54, the debate drew 2.11 million viewers. CNN also says it had an average audience of 467,000 viewers on digital platforms for the debate, bringing the total audience to almost 8 million. The 6% lift from digital viewing is the largest ever for a CNN debate, according to the network. Okay, well, whoopee. It does show, I think, that people are beginning to take the election seriously. But part of what will help people to do that will be actually making it clear that we're going to move beyond the impeachment. President Trump, in fact, alluded to that at his big rally in Wisconsin. In addition to talking about shower heads and about showers, water not coming out properly, and that's why he's changing regulations. And that's about as basic and down home as you can get. President Trump said this about what he calls the impeachment sham. Listen.
Then our opponents say, we're not going to win. Let's impeach President Trump. Let's impeach him. Got the greatest economy in our history. Our military has been totally rebuilt. Let's impeach him.
Okay. That's, of course, there were lots of boos and hoots about that. Today, it is interesting about Nancy Pelosi announcing the lineup for the impeachment managers, the people who are actually going to be arguing the case against Trump from the House of Representatives, who were announced today. She was very smart. She did not pick 13 managers, which was way too many, which is what the Republicans picked. Lindsey Graham was one of those managers. And she only picked 7. And 2 were fairly obvious. Some were a surprise. We will get to that. The further reaction to the debate, there was a panel reaction on CNN with Chris Cuomo. And I think that after lots and lots of people complaining about the evening, Chris Cuomo and panel sounded like this.
You know, I'm a little surprised. I thought it would be a much more aggressive debate tonight. I mean, this is the last shot you got till the Iowa caucus in 3 weeks.
That's Terry McAuliffe.
Front runners, nobody went after each other. I was really surprised at that. This is your last shot to make an impression before you go in it. You walk away with, does this change the dynamic of the caucus in 3 weeks?
No.
Absolutely not.
We're listening to you all here, Anderson. It's so interesting to get all of these different perspectives on what happened. I think the consensus, though, is that this was not the type of night of ambition we expected.
What is a night of ambition? I do think, by the way, that if there is any registration of the impact of this debate on the polls, you know what it's going to be? It's going to be to help Tom Steyer and Amy Klobuchar, because those are the two people who made it to the stage along with the big four. There are only six of them, and they are both committing a lot of resources to Iowa, and Steyer particularly committing a lot of resources to South Carolina, where he's recently running second, and committing also resources to the caucuses in Nevada, which come right before South Carolina. In any event, the point about all of that is that Tom Steyer did not seem less credible. Certainly, I mean, Klobuchar didn't. She had another good debate, but she had a very distressing habit, which I think will prevent her from gaining significantly from this debate. The habit was this: is virtually every answer she gave, almost without exception, she ran over. And the CNN moderators were fairly aggressive in shushing people who ran over. Joe Biden was too cautious about that. He even commented about it twice. He said, oh, well, my time's up. I'm not running over like everybody else, he said at one point. Amy Klobuchar did it again and again and again. Bernie Sanders probably had his best debate because it was kind of Bernie Unchained, railing and shouting, basically running down America. Listen.
In America today, our infrastructure is crumbling. Half of our people are living paycheck to paycheck. 87 million people have no health care or are uninsured, underinsured. We got 500,000 people sleeping out on the streets tonight. The American people are sick and tired of endless wars, which have cost us trillions of dollars. Our job is to rebuild the United Nations, rebuild the State Department, make sure that we have the capability of bringing the world together to resolve international conflict diplomatically and stop the endless wars that we have experienced.
Really, Bernie? Rebuilding the United Nations is going to take care of the people sleeping on the streets, 500,000 of them, he says, everywhere. Bernie must have said five times, and that's not an exaggeration, We're the only country in the world that doesn't guarantee health care as a basic human right. So what's the problem with that kind of rhetoric? It's worked for the left in the past. I'll tell you the problem, and it's unique to this moment. Coming right up on the MedVed Show.
Entertain your brain.
It's awesome.
Every day on the Michael MedVed Show.
And on the Michael MedVed Show, talking about the Democratic debate bust, if there's anybody who disagrees with me and feels that this was actually inspiring, encouraging, makes you eager for the campaign ahead, which will be a battle of ideas, really, you think? Then you can give me a call, 1-800-955-1776, our phone number. I mentioned that Bernie Sanders, with his general tone and talking about it's corrupt, it is, everything is corrupt, it's crooked, it's rigged, and basically blaming the big corporations and the millionaires and the billionaires for stealing everything in the country, And basically that was echoed by every candidate. And the difficulty is that this happens to be a remarkable moment for the economy. 3.5% unemployment. Can you imagine if Barack Obama had ever gotten a 3.5% unemployment, gotten it down to that? We would have thought it was messianic. And it would have been hailed that way by mainstream media. There's an important piece in the Wall Street Journal about the impact of economic growth. And even as it impacts, people like the Bernie bros. The Journal writes, irony alert, socialism-loving young people are getting the biggest pay raises in America right now. Wages have increased on average 5.8% annually for teens. Yeah, that's right. 4.4% for 20 to 24-year-olds. And 4.8% for 25 to 34-year-olds during the Trump presidency. That's every year. Maybe as their incomes rise, more millennials will question the tale of woe and revolution that Bernie Sanders is selling them. Now just listen to some of these numbers. 40 million fewer people lived last year, that's 2019, in households that get government assistance than in 2016. The food stamp rolls have shrunk by 9.5 million during the Trump presidency. And that's not because people are being denied food stamps. It's because they don't need it. Because people are doing better. Reduced government dependence is a social good far beyond the lower cost to taxpayers, writes the Journal. More important are the benefits in self-sufficiency and the contributions to the community that flow from that. Democrats on the campaign trail say the middle class is vanishing. But the opposite is true, reports the Journal, as more Americans escape poverty and others join the ranks of the affluent. Now listen to this. And again, these numbers are not in doubt. These are the government's own numbers. Between 2016 and 2018, the number of taxpayers earning less than $25,000 declined 5%. But for those making between $100,000 and $200,000, that went up 8%. And for those making more than $200,000, that went up 14%. Now, that's a very, very positive development. By the way, that means most of the gain in terms of money went to the people who are earning less than $25,000 because there's so many of them. And here's another stunning thing. The median two-earner household in the U.S. last year made what? What do you think? That's not two full-time jobs necessarily. In many cases, it's one full-time, one part-time job. The median two-earner household in the U.S. last year made $101,000, which after inflation is $10,000 more than in 2009. Okay, that's real money. A $10,000 difference increase in the median. This is not a country that is doing terribly. It is not a country that is at the point of breakdown or collapse or civil war, any of that. And the negativity that the Democrats were speaking about was so out of place. President Trump was a little bit more in touch this morning. He signed the trade agreement with China. And because the trade agreement with China, by the way, we've had a good day on the market. It's not up as much as it was earlier today. Well, now it is again. It's just went up over 29,000. It could be the first close ever over 29,000 for the Dow Jones. It's up 95 points today so far. And President Trump, in the big signing ceremony in the East Room of the White House, said this about the Phase 1 agreement with the Chinese.
We greatly appreciate your joining us at this White House event. This is a very important and remarkable occasion. Today we take a momentous step, one that has never been taken before with China, toward a future of fair and reciprocal trade as we sign Phase 1 of the historic trade deal between the United States and China. Together, we are righting the wrongs of the past and delivering a future of economic justice and security for American workers, farmers, and families. I want to thank President Xi, who is watching as we speak, and I'll be going over to China in the not-too-distant future to reciprocate. But I want to thank President Xi, a very, very good friend of mine. We're representing different countries. He's representing China. I'm representing the U.S. But we've developed an incredible relationship. But I want to thank him for his cooperation and partnership throughout this very complex process. Our negotiations were tough, honest, open, and respectful, leading us to this really incredible breakthrough. Most people thought this could never happen. Should have happened 25 years ago, by the way, but that's okay. A man who also has become a good friend of mine and somebody who's very, very talented and very capable. We're delighted to be joined by Vice Premier Liu He and Ambassador Shui and many other representatives from the People's Republic of China.
Okay, a lot of people are saying that, look, this is a very good thing for the United States. It is a good thing that President Trump is pulling back on some of the tariffs that were very damaging. And they clearly, that was something the Democrats talked about, is how those tariffs had damaged the agricultural interests in Iowa last night, because they were in Iowa. But there's another perspective on some of this that I thought was interesting. It's not just the signing today. It's this story from the Washington Post. Dateline Des Moines, Iowa. Andrew Yang bounded on the stage like he always does, grinning and grooving to Return of the Mac, that slinky old-school 90s jam that served as a signature walk-on music since the early summer. Written off early by party insiders, the entrepreneur and former nonprofit executive has assembled an intense grassroots following that has helped him attract some of the biggest crowds in the race, raised more than $16.5 million in the last quarter, and outlast better-known candidates in the field. On Monday night, it was last night, the night before the debate, Yang drew about 700 people, many of them dressed in the campaign's Math or Make America Think Harder hats, which the campaign says celebrates numbers and facts. They were crammed into a ballroom at Drake University, same place where the next night they had the debate. Andrew Yang, could he make history? He claims he will. We will find out. And will history be made with the impeachment? Probably not the kind of history anyone will feel proud of in this greatest nation on God's green earth.